Parents, for the most part, do the best they can to make the future easier for their kids. This was the case with Sam Blackman's dad. Sam grew up in New Jersey and today lives in Seattle. His father, Edward Blackman, grew up in South Philadelphia, the son of Ukrainian immigrants. His family made ends meet by making hats.
His life was hard. I mean, it was hard. My paternal grandfather died of colon cancer when my father was a teenager. Watching his father get progressively ill and die, I think was a large part of what inspired him to go into medicine.
Ed Blackman became the first person in his family to go to college. He ended up becoming a pediatrician, and he strongly urged his four sons to become doctors. As Sam tells it, yes, his father loved his boys, but he was always very clear about the fact that his job came before almost everything else.
We had two telephones in our house in the 70s, two touch-tone phones on the wall side by side. One was the office number, his work number, and one was the home number. I had three younger brothers, so my father had four kids in 8 years. And so as you can imagine, that's a pretty boisterous household, four boys. And so, you know, on the nights when we'd be having dinner and his beeper would go off and he'd have to call and we would all be in the throes of being kids, he would yell at us to basically shut up. The room had to be silent, right? It was one of those things where I think even in the throes of an argument that he and I were having at some point that he even said, you know, my job comes first. He was tough. He was very demanding of me, in particular, as the firstborn son. He would tell me when I was a kid, he'd say, Sammy, he said, you can be anything that you want to be in this world after you graduate from medical school. And so he pushed, and because I was first, he pushed me the hardest, and I think he pushed me the longest. Everything was tied to, if you don't do this, you won't be able to get into college, and if you don't get into a good college, you won't get into medical school. It was all about that. You know, I know he loved us, like in retrospect, I know that he was doing what he did because that was how he manifested his love and caring for us, but to be on the receiving end was not fun. As I got to be a teenager, you know, in the 1980s, I started to push back. And I started to develop interest in things far beyond medicine. And I realized that there were other things that I liked and other things that I liked thinking about. I liked literature and I liked philosophy and I liked music. And I started to ask, like, why am I on this track to be a doctor? Like, is this really me? Or is it just me being told to do something yet again by a very strict father? I think one of the other things that really set us up was my next youngest brother, but the one after that, was not nearly the same caliber of student in elementary school and middle school that I was with my brother. And my father made sort of the diagnosis, now this is back in the early 80s, that my third brother, the third of us, had attention deficit disorder and started him on the standard of care at the time, which was Ritalin. And I remember him telling my brother that these pills that he was getting every day were confidence pills. They were meant to make him confident. And I knew that there was no such thing as confidence pills. I was like 14 at the time. So I took it upon myself to do some research, trying to understand what Ritalin was. Well, the generic name for Ritalin is methylphenidate. And it turns out that methylphenidate is an amphetamine derivative. And at the time, I didn't understand all of the theories behind why amphetamines have sort of a paradoxical effect. You know, they make you more focused. All I knew was that my father was giving my brother amphetamines and not telling him. And that rubbed me the wrong way. And I don't know what started it, but I chose to take that fight to my dad and call him out on it. And my father was about as mad as I had ever seen him. And I remember being in my room and him screaming at me that how dare I question his judgment. And he saw my questions as were a question of his authority and of his identity. And he wanted none of that. That and just the general decay in our relationship and my growing interest in things that were not scientific made me decide when I finished high school that I wasn't going to study science. And I had gotten accepted to the University of Chicago, and I went and I earned my undergraduate degree in philosophy, of all things, with a particular interest in medical ethics. He thought that I was just going to study a bunch of crap at a liberal school, and that I was just going to grow out my hair long and smoke pot and waste my life. But we parted ways for a while. Interestingly, during the last couple of years of college, the place that I kept getting drawn to as a result of being involved in medical ethics was the hospital. So I started volunteering in the emergency room at the University of Chicago Hospital. And at the time, it was a level one trauma center. So it was amazing. It was a very active emergency room. And as a volunteer, my job was to like transport patients back and forth to radiology and strip beds and move bags of dirty laundry. But you know, as you get to know the physicians and they get to know you, they teach you. And I started to get sucked into this world. And so when I got done with college, I was like, you know what? I think I want to go to medical school, but for my own reasons, because the science was just sort of the conduit for getting to the human interactions, which were far more interesting to me. And I told my father, and he was over the moon. He was like, it was like the prodigal son had returned. Like I had been wandering in the desert for 40 years and I had come back, and now he could give me, instead of like water and food, he gave me a stethoscope and a black bag. One of the first rotations that I did was in pediatrics. Kids are terrific to take care of. They're happy. They want to get better. They don't have existential crises. And I loved it. I loved being a pediatrician. And then along the way, through my pediatric rotations, I discovered pediatric oncology and pediatric neuro-oncology, which is, you know, the care of children with brain tumors. And that was, even then, I'm like, oh my God, this is all of it in one place, because it's science, it's pharmacology, it's pediatrics, it's the deep interpersonal relationships. It was the whole package. And my father was elated. And then you know what I did? I quit. It was 2007, and my wife and I had gone through the process of adopting our daughter. You have a lot of time to think as you're filling out all the paperwork for adoption. I'm thinking to myself, am I going to just repeat the same process where it's all about me being Dr. Blackman, and my child and my wife and my family get shoehorned into the spaces in between patients? And I realized that I was likely going to do the exact same thing that had happened to me as a child. And I said, there's got to be a better way. I got a call from a headhunter about a job in oncology drug development. And I really liked the idea of applying my medical training and my scientific training to developing new cancer therapeutics to try to help tens of thousands of people. That's change at a scale that I couldn't even conceive of. And so I decided to take a chance and do that. And that's what I've been doing for the past 10 or 11 years. And my father had initially the same reaction that, you know, he had with every other transition in my life, which is, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, can you not, like, just do one thing? And then, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, we had gotten back on track in terms of staying in touch. And, you know, what he's seen now is the manifestations of my work, and he's seen the manifestations of my decision because of the way that my daughter has turned out and the type of relationship I have with my daughter. And he said to me one day, and I think he really meant it. He goes, you know, you are better at this than I ever could have been. The only thing that topped that happened actually just this past April. I took my daughter down to visit my father and his wife, and halfway through the visit, he said to me, he goes, you're a really good father. And that was the one that pushed me over the edge. It wasn't me competing with him anymore. I think we both recognized that he needed to let me be who I was and define success my own way. And I needed to acknowledge the fact that he had, you know, set me on a path and had enabled me by raising me in a house where medicine was part of the culture and how much that affected me in a positive way and set me up for the success that I had in my career. And I think we made peace there. And, you know, now today, he's interested in hearing what I'm up to. He enjoys talking to me about the things that I'm doing. And we treat each other as equals. It took 50 years, but it was absolutely worth the journey.